Hello, everybody, and welcome to a beautiful, gorgeous spring Wednesday. This is Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And you're joining me at my new time, 4 p.m. every Wednesday. And I'll be with you, same show, just an hour earlier. Today I have a great show planned for you. My guest today is Deborah Eschmeyer, who is the co-founder of FoodCorps, which is a great program that I'm going to tell you about. And I have a lot of great questions for her to tell us all more about what that program does. And if any of you out there are interested, there actually there's opportunities to get involved. And I have some recipes to share with you. But, of course, I want to first just talk about what's going on in my neck of the world. Last night, I actually had the wonderful opportunity of hosting and screening the movie All in This Tea out at the Cinema Arts Center. And All in This Tea is a wonderful documentary. It follows David Lee Hoffman as he travels to China in search of fine, high-quality organic teas. And he started, you know, over 20 years ago, and it was before people were really going into the back areas of China, and most of these people had never even seen a foreigner before. And he went directly to the farmers and purchased this beautiful tea. But what was so delightful about the movie was the ceremonial aspect of sharing tea. It was a spiritual engagement, and people took it so seriously, and it is a gesture of welcoming. You know, it's like, come over, have some tea. It's like sitting around a peace circle, and it was just so nice to be taken into that part of the world where we so rarely get to have insight into that lifestyle, and it was really beautiful. And then after, we had some beautiful tea tastings by the Tea Plant and Sacred Rose, and it was a beautiful reception. And then also, David Lee Hoffman actually joined us via Skype from his California home, and that was really wonderful to actually be able to ask the producer of the movie questions. Was great. And so if you get a chance to see the movie All in This Tea, it's really worth it. And we continue to be planning the Long Island Small Farm Summit. For those of you that don't know about it, it is scheduled for April 14th at Hofstra University, and it's going to be a great happening. Last year was unbelievable. We sold out to 600 people pre-sale, so before the doors even opened, we were sold out. So if you're interested, you can already buy tickets online at the at smallfarmsummit.com. And it's going to be a wonderful event. Will Allen from Growing Power in Milwaukee will be our keynote speaker, along with Chef Ann Cooper from Colorado right now. She's known as the Renegade Lunch Lady, and she wrote the book Lunch Lessons. And she'll be with us talking about the school lunch program and how she is an advocate for changing the way school lunch happens, as well as my guest today, Deborah Eschmeyer, is also a school food advocate, and we'll hear more about some of those challenges as we get into the show. There are great things going on. You should look in where your area, wherever that may be, for a CSA fair and try to find your local CSA options. And CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture, and it is, I think, one of the best ways of getting organic, healthy, seasonal vegetables to your plate if you are not growing it yourself. So it's really great because it builds community and you get to know other people. Or, of course, shopping at a farmer's market is also wonderful. Sometimes if you don't have a large family, a CSA can be overwhelming, you know, getting a lot of vegetables all at once. So whatever works for you, you know, just want to seek out your sources now and know your farmer. And we all need to you know, really work towards supporting our local farmers because they need our help and we need them. I was up in Albany last month for the No Farms, No Food rally, and it's really important for everyone to know if we don't have farms, we won't have food. So it's really, really important that we all help support them. There's also a movie screening in the city of Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead, which is supposed to be a great documentary. I haven't seen it yet, but I plan on going. It's being shown from April 1st through the 7th at the Quad Cinema on West 13th Street, if you're interested in that. Our Long Island CSA Fair is March 31st out in Huntington at the Cinema Arts Center. But I know NOFA New York is sponsoring these CSA fairs all across the state. So, like I said, seek out your local CSA fair. You can go to the NOFA New York website or whatever NOFA you have in your area. You can check it out, and I'm sure there's an equivalent CSA. Otherwise, you can also go to localharvest.com, great website, and they list CSAs as well as farmers markets and local sourcing for different organic things for your table. So check that out. Also on March 31st, from 9 to 3, at the Winkler Center, which is located at the Waldorf School in Garden City, they're having a conference called Once Upon a Hearth, Nourishing Ourselves, Enriching Our Culture Through Food. And I will be speaking there as well as doing a cooking demonstration. But it's a celebration of food, and it's a celebration trying to offer a humanizing counterweight to the mainstream unconsciousness relationship with food. So if you are in the Long Island area, come out to that. It should be great. And then, of course, April 14th, save the date for that. So before I invite Deborah on, I want to share a couple recipes that I brought with you. One is a tofu, lettuce, and tomato sandwich, which doesn't sound that appealing, but it was one of the things that I thought I would miss most when I actually became a vegetarian. I used to eat BLTs. I know it's terrible, but I used to eat BLTs, and I love them. And so I wanted to find an alternative, and that was before they made fake and bacon. You know, Morningstar, of course, made a fake bacon, but that's filled with garbage, so I didn't want to eat that. So I discovered how to cook tofu in a way that makes it really crisp and salty, similar to bacon. And this is so simple to make, and I have not disappointed anybody with my TLT sandwiches. And I have not found them out at any vegetarian restaurant anywhere that can compare with them. So I'd like to share that with you. The trick is slicing the tofu very thin. I'd say it's like an eighth of an inch thick, very thin slices of tofu. And so you're going to need 1 cake of extra firm tofu, 1/2 cup of good-tasting nutritional yeast. And there's different varieties of good-tasting nutritional yeast. Believe it or not, some of the good-tasting nutritional yeast has whey in it, so it's not dairy-free. But the large flakes of nutritional yeast that they carry in bulk at Whole Foods, I know, is dairy-free. So those are the ones that I get. But nutritional yeast is very high in B vitamins, and it's a great source of B vitamins for a vegetarian. I put into the yeast flakes 1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder and 1/2 teaspoon of chili powder. Then you want to have safflower oil just to cover the bottom of your pan. And I like using my cast iron frying pans. But if you have a good stainless steel heavyweight pan, that's good as well. Then you need tamari to taste. And, of course, you want some fresh organic tomatoes, which are a challenge to find this time of year. But you can find some, and some organic romaine lettuce. And a good bread, whether you're using a whole wheat sourdough bread, or if you need a gluten-free bread, you can use that as well. But you want to lightly toast the bread. Don't over-toast the bread, otherwise it just is too crunchy and doesn't work. So see, as I said before, you slice the tofu very thin and then lay it out on a towel, a clean dish towel, or a paper towel, and pat it dry. Then you're going to dip each of the thin slices of tofu into the nutritional yeast mixture. And then you're going to saute them in hot oil until they're crispy on one side, and then turn them over and get them crispy on the other side. Once they are completely crispy on both sides, then you're going to finish it off by sprinkling tamari over the tofu into the hot pan, and it will sizzle, and the tamari will, you know, immediately disperse all throughout the pan, and there will be smoking and splattering, but it's what you need to do. And the way I do it is I actually take the tamari jar and I put my finger over the top and just go back and forth so it really sprinkles over the tofu. But it's not enough to make the tofu soggy. The tofu stays crispy. And then I take it out and lay it out on some paper towel to absorb any oil that's left on it. But these pieces of tofu come out tasting crispy like bacon. So not only is it going to be great for your TLT sandwich, but it's a wonderful way to know to make tofu. Also, if you're making some, you know, scrambled tofu breakfast, or you want to make a quiche Lorraine, you don't want to use bacon, that kind of thing. It's a wonderful substitute for that. Even crumpled in your salad, it's wonderful. So then you basically are going to make a TLT. You know, put some mayonnaise or veganaise or nayonnaise, whatever you like, on the bread. If you don't want anything, leave it off. And then just put the tofu, the lettuce, and the tomato all on the bread and cut it up, and that's it. And the other sandwich that I was going to share with you was a seitan and sauerkraut sandwich. And part of why I'm sharing this with you, for those of you that don't know, I gave up cheese and fish, which I was eating about 2 months now. And so I've been vegan, and it's really been wonderful to explore all the different things that I have always eaten, but I'm just, you know, bringing them back out of my consciousness into my daily rituals. And so this is a sandwich that I used to make a lot, and I made it again the other day, and it was just like, wonderful. So I wanted to share that with you. And it's a seitan sauerkraut sandwich, and of course, you know, eating fermented vegetables is really good for our bacteria in our digestive system, and so it's really nice to find new ways to bring things like pickles and sauerkraut into your diet. So this is a great way. So again, I toast my sourdough bread, and I like sourdough bread better than yeast bread if I have a choice. I get a package of seitan. I love making my seitan, and I've shared that recipe with you, and I will share that with you again. But in a pinch, it's wonderful if you can buy some good seitan. I like the Bridge brand. I also like Ray's seitan, although it's harder to find. But you get the seitan, squeeze the juice out of it because it comes packed in juice, and then slice that about quarter inch thick. And that you're going to saute in your cast iron frying pan just till it gets crispy on each side, and then again, same method, sprinkle the tamari on top of it. So basically, you're making a wheat sandwich on top of wheat bread. So it's a lot of wheat. So if you do have a gluten allergy, this is not for you. And then I warm up my sauerkraut, and I basically make a sandwich with that sauteed seitan, sauerkraut, and mustard. Can't be easier, can't be quicker, and it's delicious. So it's just another option if you are looking for things to put between bread. It works really well. So now I would like to give a proper introduction to my guest today. Deborah Eschmeyer is the co-founder of FoodCorps, as well as the director of the policy and partnerships for FoodCorps, which is a national nonprofit organization that seeks to address the trend of childhood obesity and diet-related disease by increasing vulnerable children's knowledge of, engagement with, and access to healthy food, while preparing the next generation of leaders for careers in food, health, and agriculture. And Deborah will tell us more about FoodCorps program as we get into the program today. But the centerpiece of the organization is a AmeriCorps public service program that places highly motivated young leaders in limited resource communities of need where they conduct hands-on nutrition education, build and tend school gardens, and bring high-quality local food into public school cafeterias. She's also a Kellogg Food and Society Fellow, and she created One Tray, which was a campaign that successfully encouraged Congress and the USDA to expand farm-to-school programs. She was formerly the Communications and Outreach Director of the National Farm-to-School Network, and prior to that worked as the program project director at the National Family Farm Coalition, Washington, D.C. Deborah's also served as an editor for Food Justice, as a contributor to the documentary Lunchline, and as the author of several farm-to-school publications. And Deborah works from her 20-acre organic farm called Harvest Sun Farm in Ohio. So, Deborah, are you there?
I am. Hello. Welcome. Hello.
Hi, Deborah. I'm so glad you're able to join us. The work you're doing
is... Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, well, the work you're doing is so tremendous and so needed. It's really wonderful. How did you first become interested in transforming school food?
You know, I think I first became interested in working in the school food arena back when, actually when experience. So Food Corps, as you said earlier, we're a nonprofit national service organization, and we work to give vulnerable children an enduring relationship with healthy food. We are a proud member of the AmeriCorps National Service Network, so our service leaders, they're actually service members, the people with boots on the ground in our schools. And we recruit these amazing AmeriCorps service members for a year of full-time public service, and they work in school food environments through the three pillars that you mentioned, knowledge, engagement, and access. And in that, we're trying to improve, you know, the food environment in high obesity, limited resources, communities, and schools. And we were actually founded in the day that President Obama signed the Kennedy Serve America Act in 2009, when there was this opportunity of AmeriCorps tripling its service members by 2017. And so we launched our first class of 50 service members in 10 states last August. And since then, we've reached 33,000 children, providing the nutrition education and building school gardens and working to get local food into the cafeteria. And, you know, I couldn't be more proud of these selfless leaders who dedicate a year of their life to public service. You know, in just the last 6 months, they have worked with parents and kids to build 226 school and community gardens across the country.
Wow.
And they have engaged. That's amazing. And they've actually engaged more than 600 volunteers in working in school food. So it's just really a delight to be a part of watching this next generation of leaders in the field of food and farming and education. And it's just a really exciting time to see this great interest of improving our school food environments.
Oh, it's wonderful. Now, are you funded through AmeriCorps?
We are. The Corporation for National and Community Service is the fiscal entity over AmeriCorps, and so we receive funding from AmeriCorps, but that's only around 20% of our funding, and AmeriCorps is a federal program. The rest of our funding comes from many other donors and foundations, from the Kellogg Foundation to the Cornell Foundation to the Draper Richards Kaplan Foundation to the Whole Kids Foundation. Because we're trying to reach 1,000 service members by 2020, we want to be in every state in the glorious union.
Mm-hmm.
So we're always looking for new funding partners so we can expand to high need areas around the country.
That's great, because I noticed you were not in New York, and I know there's a lot of areas in need in New York, and so I'm glad to know that you are planning on expanding.
Yes, and we're definitely looking at, if you've noticed right now, we're currently in Arkansas, Arizona, Iowa, Maine, Massachusetts, Michigan, Mississippi, New Mexico, North Carolina, and Oregon. And next year we're adding, the next program year, we're adding Connecticut and Montana. And then we're going to look to add about three to five more states in the next year. So we're going to keep expanding sustainably, and as we grow our states, we're actually going to deepen in the sites that we are now. So our 50 service members actually currently serve around 200 schools, and it's really amazing. You know, as many of your listeners probably know, that when you have a child engaged in growing their food, you know, they plant the seed. They nurture it. They watch it grow. They then go to the classroom, and they hear about it. You know, they learn about the history of seeds, and they learn about all the different colors of tomatoes. They're so much more likely to eat it in the cafeteria. And, you know, we try so hard to put healthy food on their plates, and the worst possible thing is if that healthy food goes to waste, you know, if they don't eat it. And so a lot of the role that Food Corps plays is making it fun and engaging and really bringing culture back into agriculture and encouraging agricultural literacy and having kids have fun and understanding where their food comes from.
Are you using a preset curriculum, or has the Food Corps come up with their own curriculum?
That is a terrific question. We get this question a lot, and actually we don't have a preset curriculum because we work K through 12 in very diverse populations. And right now, what our plan is, and we're going to continue to refine the plan, is that we invest in these grassroots communities who have a proven track record of working in their communities. So Food Corps doesn't go down and swoop into a school and use a cookie-cutter approach. Instead, we have a very steady and strategic grassroots approach where we work with a respected nonprofit or a government agency within the community who already has a relationship with the teachers, with the principals, with the parents. And we give them, you know, that just needed extra human capital, that energy to help make these programs possible. So that way, when we leave, it's a sustainable program and they can carry on the curriculum. And so we use the curriculum that is the most appropriate, that works for the science teachers that we work with, that works within the state education standards. And that way, you know, what happens in a tribal community in New Mexico is not the same as what's going to happen in Oregon or in Michigan. So we have to be very cognizant of creating an approach that works uniquely in the different settings that we work in.
Uh-huh. And so do you also get involved in cooking with the children?
We do, which is actually one of the most fun parts of the program.
Yeah, that's my passion.
Cooking and dicing and teaching about spices. Instead of adding salt, you add flavor, and showing them really how do you prepare the foods. Because, as you know, one part of the issue is teaching them how to grow it and then teaching them nutrition education and eating it, but you need to be able to prepare it to really enjoy it. So cooking is definitely a strong component of our program.
Mm-hmm. And I think when the kids really get to cook it, they're so much more likely to taste it. I mean, growing it is certainly true as well, but then cooking it, and I know I've said this before, but I love watching peer pressure work in a positive way as opposed to a negative way, you know. So often when kids see one child try something, even if in general they would not want to try it, they tend to because they see others enjoying it.
Right, exactly. And it's actually really fun. I was recently at a after-school event where our service members were doing a chocolate beet cake recipe.
A chocolate what cake?
They had harvested the beets.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, some families, some people don't like beets, you know, not to put him in a certain position, but President Obama does actually not prefer beets, nor does the First Lady.
Uh-huh.
And we would actually love to prepare a chocolate beet cake for her because I think she would adore it.
Uh-huh.
But it's an example of I watch these kids who, you know, they prepared the beets and then, you know, they made the smell, the sounds of, you know, the ooh and whatnot when they're smelling the beets as they were cooking and then pureeing them. But I can tell you that not a single child left a crumb behind of that chocolate beet cake. And it was so delicious and moist and healthy. And it had a great nutrition content. We used whole wheat flour. And it's just an example of how you can have a good treat and have it be healthy as well.
That's so important because so many times when I'm working with parents, they're like, well, how can I deprive my child of a chocolate chip cookie, you know, if I want to be healthy? And, you know, I try to tell them, you don't deprive them of a chocolate chip cookie, but when they have a chocolate chip cookie, it's one that you've made with organic ingredients, using whole wheat flour, and many doses of love into it, and then it's much healthier.
Right, and the other thing that we teach a lot is that, you know, we're not the food police. You know, what we're doing is we're teaching how to have a healthy diet, and that, you know, all things come in moderation, and it's not placing French fries in this evil zone or placing chocolate chip cookies in a bad place. Those are all fine and good as a treat, you know, as a once in a time sometimes food. As Cookie Monster now says about
Isn't
cookies,
that great?
Sometimes
I love,
food.
Right, I love that about Cookie Monster now. I hadn't seen, you know, my baby is 22 and my oldest is 32, so I haven't watched Sesame Street very much recently. But when I saw it, I don't know, maybe a couple of years ago, and I started hearing about Cookie Monster, you know, not saying I want more, 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 but saying that it's a sometimes food, I was so happy to see that change. I don't know when that change took place, but, you know, it was a long time coming. And so I'm really so happy to see that. Another thing that I find challenging with school programs or school PTAs and things, and I was wondering whether you find that where you work, whether they try to raise money by, you know, having kids collect school caps to soda cans or, you know, labels from cereal boxes of unhealthy cereals or any of that kind of stuff that you have to fight with. Because I know that's something that PTAs very often use as ways of creating resources, you know, and we're, you know, trying to get away from that here. And I'm wondering if you come across that at all.
Yeah, you know, we do. And I think part of it is just we need to think a little creatively about ways we can use those fundraisers in a new light. You know, for example, instead of doing chocolate bar fundraisers, you do fruit fundraisers of apples. And like FFA, the Future Farmers of America, which actually is known now as FFA, they do these glorious fruit sales in the winter of just different kinds of citrus. And it's so successful and extremely healthy. And that's something that we can look at as model fundraisers. And there's a couple of our sites where they have potluck fundraisers where they bring the community together and they do a demonstration of what a local farm-to-school lunch would look like. And they accept donations at the door, and that goes towards their after-school programs to buy ingredients for them to cook with. And there's a lot of creative ways that we can think outside the box about how we can support, you know, local regional food systems and make it healthy in the process.
Mm-hmm. And when is Food Corps looking to expand? Do you have any idea of when you're going to be able to get into more states and, you know, and whether or not you're also looking at going into any health centers or, you know, expanding beyond just schools?
Yeah, and the reason we're always looking to expand, you know, as I said, we have 10 states now, and then August 2012 we'll be in 12 states, and then the following year we'll probably be in 15 states. The reason we're in schools is because it's the front lines, you know, of where we need to be, of the, you know, the classroom, the cafeteria, the playground. It's really where we should be in regards to combating food insecurity and childhood obesity. You know, mm-hmm. more than 32 million children eat school food 5 days a week, and they receive more than half their daily calories in school. So one of the reasons we focus on school is because of that capacity. The other is that it is the most highly regulated meal in the country. If we can improve that meal, we can improve any meal. So we're kind of starting with the hardest
right.
environment, which is school. And the other thing is school is supposed to be about education, and it's supposed to be about putting our best foot forward as a
Thank set. You. Thank you. Yes.
Well, and because of that, you know, this is where we need to be. We need to serve our children, and it's only appropriate that we're there for them. And, you know, there's 100,000 public schools in the United States, and, you know, I don't think I'm going to rest until Food Corps is in every one of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I want to talk more about how people can get involved and what else we can do to help support your efforts.
Great.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Deborah Eschmeyer. She is the co-founder and director of Food Corps and policy and partnerships for Food Corps, which is a national nonprofit. And Deborah, are you with us again?
Yes, hello.
Hi. So I know you are in the process right now of recruiting new Food Corps volunteers, or not volunteers, but partners. What is involved in applying? I know they have until March 25th. What kind of person are you looking for this job, and what does a day in the life of a Food Corps service member look like?
Yeah, all very great questions. And so for folks that are interested in becoming a service member, it's actually really easy to go to our website, and we have a, you just go to foodcorps.org, and you go to serve with us, which is a link on the top, and then basically we're looking for someone who's passionate about healthy food, farms, and kids. You know, it's pretty much that simple, because someone who's really dedicated to teaching children about food nutrition, who are interested in helping grow food for kids in school gardens, and who are really interested in changing what's for lunch by connecting farms and schools. And as a service member, if someone's interested on the call, you'll be placed with a service site for a one-year term. And service sites operate under our 10 partners, the 10 state partners that I mentioned earlier. And then we'll add again Connecticut and Montana for the 2012-2013 service term. And what you get in return is a $15,000 living allowance, a $5,550 AmeriCorps Siegel Education Award, student loan forbearance, health insurance, child care reimbursement, training and mentorship, and, you know, just the experience of a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. But, is it $1,500 for the whole year?
It's one full year, and that's basically August to August.
Uh-huh. And are they given a place to live?
Please?
Are they given a place to live where they are sent?
Yeah, so we don't set up where they're going to live, but a lot of times service members are from a local community, so they already have a living arrangement.
I see.
What we'll do is a service site will actually assist them in finding, you know, cost-appropriate lodging. And for a day in the life, we actually also have several examples that we've been publishing. We have around 6 or 7 blogs that we've demonstrated, you know, what it's like. And one of the favorites that we actually have on my website is one from a service member in North Carolina. His name is Sebastian Mascaris. And, you know, he says he gets up in the morning and he works out and does, you know, 7 sets of 35 push-ups. And then he has breakfast and green tea. And then he moves on to getting to school and, you know, providing the nutrition education, a tasting lesson at an elementary school, and then meeting with a local farmer to get a fresh vegetable into the school cafeteria, and then maybe proceeding to talk to the local extension agent about possibly figuring out how to expedite the local farmer's certification that they need to provide the food to the school, then calling the farmer again and finding out how much product they have available for the next couple of weeks, and then having a meeting with the local parents, school garden committee, bringing in some local extension agents, talking to the principal about what the school garden is going to have for the season, and then possibly driving to the farm and checking it out and see what's available for the week, maybe possibly helping harvest, and then driving back to the school and doing another taste test and providing another science class on the carrots that they're going to see in the classroom that week and in the cafeteria that week, and then going into the office to write up a report on a creative way to have kids try new foods, and maybe they create a I Like It sticker to incentivize that first taste rule of at least them trying it. And then, you know, going home and reflecting on the day. And really the day in the life varies so much by every service member and what they're doing.
That's a very full day.
It's a very full day.
Very full day.
Exciting.
Very full day.
And this is what we're hearing, which is so lovely, what we're hearing back from our service members who, you know, they don't want to be in front of a computer all day. They
right.
want to do. They want to serve. And so that's what's so exciting about our program is it's direct service. You know, they are going out there and they're making a difference. They're working in the cafeteria. They're working in the classroom. They're working in the community. And
right.
they're having the experience of a lifetime. And
right.
you're getting that, you know, the stipend is a public service stipend because it's not a job. It's service. And at the same time, you're getting these career skills that are just going to serve them the rest of their life. And it really is this really great blending of meeting these high-need areas and providing the service while at the same time learning just as much as you're giving back.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, how many service members do you have and how many in each location? Like when you say you're in a state, are you in one school? Like if you're in New Mexico, are you in one school or are you in a few schools?
Yeah. As I mentioned, we have 50 service members operating in 200 schools in 10 states.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it varies by location. For example, in Boston, we may have one service member just in one Boston public school. But in Iowa, for example, in the rural areas, we'll have one service member actually serving six schools because they have to drive a farther distance to go to the school. So it really varies, again, by what the need is for the location. And that decision about how many schools a service member can serve is made in coordination with the partners that we're working with on the ground.
Mm-hmm. And so do you get support from the partnerships that you're working with on the ground? Like, you know, a service person that's coming in, there's no overlap. You know, sometimes there's, you know, programs that I know that run two-year cycles, so people are coming in while someone's still there who's seasoned. But here, everybody starts together new. So are there people on the ground that have already been doing it so they have some guidance or...
Yeah, and like I mentioned before, we work with these grassroots partners, so they're not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are the people in the community where we provide the service member. And for our current program, we're working on our site transition, and what this means is that many of our service members are going to try to serve again next year to serve 2 years in a row, which you can do. And others, we're already working on that transition of knowledge to the next service member so that they can jump right in to where the other member left off. And so they'll have the list of, you know, contacts, information about where everything is, how far along is the food service and providing local food, where can they literally jump right in. And what's so nice about the program is that, you know, because we work with these local communities who are experts and on the ground, then there's not really a big gap because they continue to be the amazing organization that they are, and we just insert that next infusion of energy with that next service member.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like such a wonderful experience. So if people want to learn more about this and possibly apply, how would they do that? Go to your website?
Yeah, all they have to do is just check out our website, and you can go to serve with us, like I mentioned before, and you can click on the Apply Now button, and there's applicant frequently asked questions.
Great.
There's more information about where you'll serve, and it details the sites and whether they're rural or urban. They'll do a little description of the exact site, and folks can apply now until March 25th if they're interested.
Great. So, in your eyes, what do you imagine America could look like 20 years from now if we all work with the belief that all children deserve a healthy future?
You know, it's a great question. You know, I envision a nation of well-nourished children, you know, children who know what healthy food is, how it grows, where it comes from, and who have access to it every day. You know, the idea that these children who are immersed in a healthy food environment at a young age, They will learn better, live longer, and liberate their generation from diet-related disease. That is what I hope for.
Yeah. I mean, when you see the statistics, how many kids are obese and that their life expectancy is shorter than that of their parents, and, you know, most of the diseases that are killing our people are diet-related diseases, and they can be changed. You know, we can turn this around. And the kind of work that you're doing is really so important and really can have that kind of impact. How can others help to make that vision possible?
If folks are interested, you know, there's ways from applying to become a service member to supporting our work through sponsorships and donations, to volunteering alongside our service members in the field, to, you know, getting out and gardening. Like, just we're coming together. We're bringing all of our service members to Washington, D.C. We're kind of doing a spring into school garden service week and really encouraging people to get out and garden. You know, get your kids out there, get involved in the community plot, go out there in the school garden and volunteer. You know, the best that we can do is, if people may be way too busy to consider dedicating a year of their life to something like this, but you know what? Hopefully you can dedicate an afternoon. You know, go outside, get some seeds and get planting. And part of it is that, you know, it's fun. We're really trying to turn an epidemic into the epicurious. Like, have people, you know, enjoy good food and be healthy because of it.
Right, and also the experience of being outside. I mean, you know, we have people with nature deprivation. You know, they don't get outside with the between computers and TVs and, you know, iPods and pads and all that stuff. People so often are sitting and they're not actually engaged in activity. And so that's also such a benefit of growing your food, is you're actually out there having fun and doing work. And so, you know, it's so essential.
Getting a little vitamin D while we're at it.
right. So I was really happy to see that you also have an organic farm in Ohio, 20 acres, right?
Yes. I practice what I preach. We launched a community-supported agriculture program this year and have been selling at farmers markets and restaurants and groceries for the last several years.
How many acres do you farm?
Well, we're farming now around 10 acres.
Wow.
Of the 22. We have transitioned 5 acres to organic, and the rest are in transition. And we grow a large variety, a very diverse crop rotations, from asparagus to zucchini, is what I like to say. And we have a really good time of a growing food, you know, really going through the full cycle of growing and appreciating the community aspect of agriculture.
Mm-hmm. And when you say you have 5 acres transitioning, is that because you purchased it already as a working farm and it was already a conventional farm and you're transitioning it over, or did you find that you needed to?
This is actually a fifth-generation family farm on my husband's side, and it has been conventionally farmed for years and for generations. And my husband and I chose to transition it to, you know, fruit and vegetable production. And we do have some acres certified, 5 acres certified for organic fruit and vegetable production. And it's, but at the same time, you know, I grew up on a commodity dairy farm, so I appreciate my conventional farming brethren who are out there every day who take that challenge of transitioning an empty canvas to something that produces food and fiber. It is a beautiful challenge, and I don't begrudge my conventional farming brothers and sisters.
Uh-huh. You don't. I'm surprised. I would think that, you know, I'm such an advocate for going to sustainable practices. I don't begrudge them as far as being in that place where they, you know, followed the path that they were led down, so I don't blame them. But once people know what, you know, you can look at the statistics and see that, you know, in the long run, it hasn't really helped with yield, and it has been, you know, detrimental to the soil and to people's health, that in the long run, are you not a supporter of people trying to transition to sustainable practices?
You know, I have my personal beliefs. You know, obviously I chose to be an organic fruit and vegetable farmer as well. But, you know, farming is hard work. It is extremely hard work. And like you said, you know, there's a lot of reasons why someone may have been led down the path of the form of agriculture that they practice.
Right.
And it will take a lot of healing and time of our public policy, you know, our subsidy support to what we encourage in regards to transparency and labeling, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just going to take a while, and it's going to take consumers. It's going to take consumers being educated in what they're buying to really transform what's being grown on our soil.
Right.
And that's something that I always encourage, is people need to educate themselves on the food that they're eating and make that decision based on facts. And, you know, and that's kind of what I encourage.
Right. You know, I agree with you absolutely as far as educating people. That's the crux of what I try to do. Because that's the only way that, you know, with demand, that there's going to be this change. You know, and I totally appreciate the work of a farmer. I mean, the little bit that I have seen, and I have not grown up on a farm. You know, I'm in the New York, Long Island area. So I haven't grown up on a farm, but I feel so much empathy for the place that farmers have found themselves in, because like I said before, I don't blame them at all, and I want to help in whatever way I can to help the transition and help with food policy and, you know, all of that good stuff. But I do hope that we encourage as many farmers as possible to start making that transition and give them the financial support and encouragement that they need in order to be able to do that. Because I just think the chemical way is just not working.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we need to value the stewardship of land and the complicated and glorious occupation of being a farmer and what that means. And it is a real challenge to be at the whim every day of Mother Nature.
Mm-hmm.
And it's why the government provides unique support to the food and agricultural system, is because we're feeding society. And that's why it's become so very complicated and the political rubric and why actually the 2012 Farm Bill is a hot debate right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that, again, like, kids need to understand at a young age the importance of food and where it comes from. And that's, again, like an aspect of our program for Food Corps, is that we want kids to appreciate food and to see farming as a viable occupation. And too many times now we're going down the path of seeing food as something that comes from the grocery store and not the soil. And so it's kind of like after watching The Lorax this weekend, you know, let it grow. Like, that's the song that kept sticking in my head. You know, this is the same thing with the food system. You know, let it grow. Let kids understand how food grows, and it all goes back to ag literacy at a young age will reap many rewards in the future.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, working with kids, they're the ones that are really ultimately going to make change. And like you said, if you're patient, you know, if you get them when they're young, but in 20 years, as you said, the vision of where it could be is really hopeful. And there's such a great swell of the farm-to-school programs and the farm-to-cafeteria programs happening now that, you know, there's that possibility. I mean, I think if you know, my mother had once said, you know, if she thought that she had to stop smoking cigarettes when she was pregnant, she doesn't know if she would have had four kids. That was back then. You know, and what we know now, you know, people wouldn't think of smoking cigarettes through four pregnancies, you know. And so, and it was her children coming home with the campaign of, "Mom, you got to stop smoking cigarettes, you're going to die," that got my mother to stop smoking cigarettes. And in the same realm, kids coming home from school saying, "I don't want to eat that. That's not healthy for me. You know, I need to eat fruits and vegetables." That the kids can start making the change even with their parents,
mm-hmm.
And start changing the landscape and making better choices.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So, Deborah, thank you so much for joining us. I think, you know, the work that you've been doing is exceptional. I didn't even get to talk to you about the Kellogg Food and Community Fellowship that you had. But I'll have to save that for the next time because we are running out of time. But I want to thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your insight and, you know, and starting this wonderful organization and making the changes that you're making in all of the schools and impacting the areas that are in such need.
Well, thank you. And I hope folks check out foodcorps.org.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure you will get plenty of people checking that out. So thank you. And for everybody who's been listening, thank you for joining me at my new time slot, 4 o'clock. If you want to follow me on Twitter at IEatGreen or IEat_Green, or if you want to join the conversation, use the hashtag IEatGreen. Everyone have a great rest of the day, and I'll be with you again next week at 4 o'clock. Have a great one. Bye-bye.